Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's going on, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, makers, artists, podcasters, writers, filmmakers, designers, and coders who are on a mission of bringing their ideas to life by creating new things and getting their work to work. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative life for some time, I hope you'll learn something new in this podcast, challenge your assumptions about what is possible, and chase big ideas so you can become who you were born to be. When was the last time you were inspired to think bigger and swing for the fences in creating something of value to you and the world? This is the philosophy that drives the team behind Orange Nebula as they unlock their creativity and bring board games, stories, and other creative products to life. In this interview episode of Getting Work to Work, I talk with Mark Neidlinger, Tom Mattson, and Lacey Fott about vision and drive, the creation of their hit game Vindication, why creative people should be focused on following through and finishing their creative projects, and the role trust plays in their work. Show notes and links to resources mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/344. You'll also find links to stream the show on the major podcast platforms and an opportunity to sign up for my email newsletter, The Curiosity Lab. Each week, I send out some thoughts on curiosity, along with books, videos, podcasts, and other resources blowing my mind as well. And speaking of blowing my mind, be sure to check out the amazing work of Kyle Schold at Freshwater Bay Creative. I had him design a poster that I'm excited to launch this week, and I hope that you'll check out The Curiosity Lab and gwtw.co to see his work. In the meantime, head to freshwaterbaycreative.com to see his amazing portfolio. Fleet Commander Mark and fellow Orange Nebula crew members, welcome to Getting to Work. I botched my own show name.
It's all right.
Welcome,
it happens.
Welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is an absolute pleasure to have you all on the show.
Thank you.
It's pretty pleasurable for us too.
Well, that's good to know. I've heard good things, but you can never be on the end of your own show.
You can't. You don't know.
Although that would be kind of weird to have a conversation with yourself. But
I know, I'm feeling challenged. Like, we should all interview ourselves.
I'm here with myself today.
That's right.
And I'm going to be asking some deep probing questions.
I think that'd be a great show. Live with Lacey J. Lively.
If you were to have your own show, what's one interesting question that you would ask yourself?
I would ask myself, how is it possible to have this much fun all the time in life? That's what I would ask myself.
Yeah. Why are you like this?
Yeah, exactly. There's the question.
What happened to you?
What happened to you? Really talking
just
to yourself.
Just explain all of this.
Why do you have so much fun every day?
I think part of it is a gift. You know, I think part of it is something that is not a learned technique, but I'm born with personally. I just like fun and joy and happiness.
Well, why wouldn't we have this much fun every day?
Yeah.
It's a mindset. It's definitely a mindset. And I think that Tom and I had this conversation yesterday, how you kind of have to be responsible for your own joy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I do believe that. I think if you think that other people can steal your joy, then you didn't really do a very good job protecting it.
I read a lot of books about how to be happy, and I just do them. I do the things I learned.
She follows instructions. Yeah. I don't know if that's a strong suit for you. You make your own rules.
That's pretty awesome, though, because a lot of people will read a book and just be like, I read the book. Isn't that good enough? So kudos to you for actually doing the work.
Why isn't life fixed? I read this in everything.
So what's one interesting bit of trivia people should know about each of you?
Oh, boy.
Let's see.
I have about a 3-inch scar down the middle of my head from a 7th grade performance of Hamlet that became extra awesome.
Were you trying to take out your own skull or something?
What happened?
No, it was in the final scene and the other kid tripped and he brought his wood sword down right on top of my head and the special effects got real, real, real quick.
Did it really bleed on stage?
Oh, it was bad. There were like people screaming in the audience.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't feel it because it just, you know,
shock.
Injury like that. Yeah. But then my face was warm. And I put my hand up there, and then I looked at my hand, and it was all red. And then people in the crowd started screaming. I think people weren't sure if it was real or not. And then I jumped off the stage and, like, I'm down in the front row, and for some reason, no one's helping me. And so I have this memory of walking through the hall of the middle school after hours, just, like, squirting on the lockers, and someone, a mom, finally found me and took me to the emergency room.
Is this a dream you had, or is this real?
This is real.
Well, now I don't know.
He doesn't know.
It's your best performance of your life.
I'll have to, you know, check my scar later. And
scar stories. I have one too. So when I was a little kid, probably six, I was playing with Tinker Toys tied on a string and swung one up really hard, like David and Goliath style, and it hit the glass shade on the top of the light. I bent over to pick up the Tinker Toy, and the glass shade stuck.
It like fell off the ceiling.
A millimeter away from my spine. So it stuck in my back like a dorsal fin on a dolphin. And I had to get taken to the ER, and they said, yeah, a 16th of an inch this way, and you're probably not here right now.
Oh my gosh.
That's my traumatizing. I don't think that's the question you asked. We're going straight to trauma.
Your description of it is really charming, though.
Dorsal fin.
It's like a dolphin. It's a mindset.
It's a near-death dolphin experience.
Okay, my trivia is easy. My parents are both in the medical field, mm-hmm. so we'll stay on this. No, but my dad was a paramedic, and the company he worked for flew our family down to Florida. We went to Disney World, and then we drove an ambulance back from Florida to Washington.
Oh, wow.
My family all in an ambulance across country. That was pretty cool.
Did you turn the lights on and like go super fast?
No, that's illegal.
But did you do that?
No.
I know it's illegal.
So where's the trauma? Did you have to pick anyone up along the way?
No, there's no trauma on that. Sorry. I didn't stay on that vein.
It's a
mindset thing.
I believe the question was describe something traumatic.
No.
So Tom, when you are in that moment and you have the sword come down on your head, do you still deliver the line or do you just forget your lines at that point?
I think I forgot my line. I'm really disappointed in my seventh grade self.
For not just going through with it.
He should have really had the strength to just power through and make the scene. Mm-hmm. I feel like it still made the scene. But,
but in a different way.
You know, it wasn't respectful of the bard's work, let's say that.
It's not the show people paid to see.
Right. You went from Hamlet to Macbeth pretty quickly.
Yes, I was mixing the message pretty bad.
That's awesome. Well, Mark, I've had the pleasure of having coffee and talking with you several times, as well as admiring all the work that you do. And the question that I have to start with is just, where does your vision and dedication to your craft stem from?
Wow. Well, that goes back. I guess, I don't know, all of us have a creative self. And, you know, I've lived on this earth, you know, for quite a while now. And so mm-hmm. I've learned a few things the hard way and failed a lot. I think at this point, you know, the vision that we have at Orange Nebula now, we say that we exist to inspire people to think bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And,
I love that.
And for me, that really is true. Like, there's parts of your craft that when you get to a certain point, you get really good at it and, mm-hmm. and it can become mundane or routine. And you start to ask questions about why am I doing this? And is money worth it? And, you know, mm-hmm. like, what's the commodity in my life and what am I motivated by? And I did that a couple of years ago and I guess a few more than that. But at this point in my life, the creative drive and the vision comes from challenging myself to do things I haven't done before mm-hmm. that I get the opportunity to share with other people.
What I've heard you talk about in this vein too is the idea that maybe 5-6 years ago there was not a lot going for you. You were not happy with a lot of things in your life and you were like, fine, listen, if I've got to keep, you know, grinding every day, I want to be grinding doing something I love. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be grinding doing something that brings joy and passion to the world. And so you just started doing, you know, working on Vindication, started working on the board game.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, it did kind of start there. My personal story is, you know, I've been in the design industry and kind mm-hmm. of branding most of my life. And I've always been a pretty solid designer, but, mm-hmm. you know, from a businessman perspective, I think I've learned most things the hard way. And after, you know, 15, 20 years of doing that, you do kind of reach a burnout point. And you couple that with going through tough things in your life, mm-hmm. you know, maybe being depressed occasionally, those types of things. I went through those things. And like Lacey mentioned, I reached a point where I'm like, I don't really even like getting up anymore. Mm. Like, what is driving? Like, I have to do something for me that's not going to be, you know, destroyed by a client's subjectivity or you know, creative work gets degraded so quickly.
Yes.
By uneducated clients. And that's just the nature of the business. But for me, I just reached this point where, like, I'm at least going to do something for myself. So I started designing a tabletop board game in my spare time. I would, I would get up at 5 a.m. I would work until 8 at the coffee shop. I would go to put a full day of work in, and then I'd come home and I'd work on it at night. And I would do that pretty much 7 days a week for about 3 years. And it was just became my passion. It was almost my escape from my career and my life. And I unlocked something inside myself when I did that, when I gave myself permission to make something. And I poured everything that I had learned into it. And so it really was a powerful awakening for me. I didn't have any intention of, you know, necessarily selling it when I started making it. I was going to make it for me and my friends. And I was thinking really kind of small. I'm like, you know, I'm going to make this, and I'm sure it'll never, you know, I'm not a board game designer. How would I, you know, how would I ever compare with all these big name designers and stuff like that? And coincidentally, I've thought that about graphic design as well, but all of those voices are lying. And that was the thing that I realized. And so it evolved into this intellectual property in this game that really, really took off and got some nice critical acclaim and is now worldwide in many, many countries. And so, boy, I really taught myself a lesson, and it was a hard lesson, and it had, you know, kind of a good ending.
Kind of.
That's amazing. And one of the things that I really appreciate is, from an outside perspective, it's like I see that vision and dedication. But what's interesting to me is, from Tom and Lacey, your perspective, how does Mark's vision and dedication push you each?
Okay, well, I have a good answer to this. What I noticed from Mark, and honestly, I think why I try to spend so much time around him, I just hope it rubs off on me, is he's got this ability to see a project. He talks about it like, at the beginning of a project, before you even get going, you step back, you take a perspective, like a higher perspective, and just imagine what this could be. If you could swing for the fences and this could become exactly what you want it to be, what would it look like? And then it's not a question of if it will or won't happen, it's how and how long it will take.
Wow.
That's what I see from Mark, is that there's never a question whether something is or isn't going to work. It's just how long it's going to take and what steps we need to take in order to get it there. So I don't know, this single-minded focus of just having faith that if you continue to take steps, that you'll be able to create what you're working for.
Does that give you chills when you hear that? I mean, I'm getting chills over here.
Mark just gave me a fist bump when I said it.
Yeah, I mean, that level of thinking is just so necessary in this world.
Yeah, I'll just say, before Tom says something wonderful, that these types of things don't happen just, you know, with one person. So, you know, you have to surround yourself with like-minded people who think big, who want to swing for the fences, who are creative and inspired and have a motor that doesn't quit. And that's why I've surrounded myself with these people. My team is incredible. And I don't really think anybody can do very much significantly without the help of others.
Well said.
What Mark has pulled out of me goes a lot to what he just described about his passion, which is he gave himself permission and has modeled that for the rest of us. Through Mark, I have given myself permission. Every one of us wakes up and does something all day long. And too many of us, the thing that we do all day long doesn't have any representative value of our heart or our intention in the world, or what we want to bring to our life or the lives of people around us, or our legacy, or any of those things that we all think about in the background as stuff that we want to do someday or that we do in our off hours. Work is what we spend all day doing.
Yes.
And we too often don't see it as the biggest thing that we do every day. And why do we allow it to be something that we just kind of settle for and then try to define ourselves with the things we do in the off hours? Let's make what we do at work have real value
and represent us
and represent us and give yourself permission to take risks and to leap and to be passionate and to do things that may on paper up front seem foolish because, you know, over here there's a 401k,
right.
But over there is passion and truth. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a choice. And Mark has empowered me to make the right choice that for a lot of years I took the what seemed like the safe choice, but in hindsight wasn't.
Mm. Interesting. I really love the notion of team and the team that you've built up around Orange Nebula. And I'm wondering how each of you inspire one another to greatness. We've talked a lot about Mark, but what about you, Tom, and you, Lacey? How do you inspire others around you?
Well, I'm going to cheat and talk about how Lacey inspires others.
I was going to do the perfect. Same thing.
High five. So,
See, that's just the sign of a team right there.
So let me tell you about the way that Lacey sees the world. Lacey can take the smallest little benign things that happen in life, mm-hmm. and she looks at everything through this special lens where she will find meaning and purpose and growth opportunity in everything that happens. Mm. And even things that aren't cheery or sunny, you know, she will take everything in life and find the good in it or find the lesson in it and inspire everyone around her to think about life in those same terms. There is nothing, even painful things or failures, that don't make us better. Mm-hmm. And Lacey makes that a reality. You know, that's something that everyone would say, oh yeah, of course. You know, you can derive lessons from everything in life. You know, there's no such thing as a bad experience. Mm-hmm. But you know, most of us don't actually live our lives that way. Lacey does, and she lives that way loudly in a way that influences everyone around her.
That's absolutely awesome. True.
Awesome.
That feels good. Makes me smile.
There you go. Enjoy that smile.
From Tom, what I see a lot is I don't think I've ever seen him do anything halfway. If he is sending an email out to a client, if he is writing an update for our Kickstarter backers, anything that he's doing, he's putting every ounce of heart and soul into mm-hmm. it. And it makes me question my work the same way. I see the writing that he puts out and the thoughtfulness and mindfulness that he puts into everything that comes out of the Orange Nebula or Blue Blazes brand. Mm-hmm. And it is this quality and level that pushes me to question my own work and push myself to do my own work better. And I think pushes all of us to just this higher level. And I don't know, I've never even heard him complain about anything ever.
That's amazing. Yeah. Let me.
Mark says that because he hears me complain all the time.
that's true. Let's not go to the dark side. Let me just add a couple more things here.
Please.
We've got four other people on the team that aren't on the podcast here, but Mark Daffron, our art director, and Derek, our digital designer, and, mm-hmm. and Teresa and Viola, like, we all do things with a high level of intentionality. We don't just coast. Nobody's here to just punch the clock and leave. These people take ownership of what they're doing. They're craftsmen and really, really committed to the creative life that they want to pursue. Mm-hmm. And that is so important for the team dynamic and for accomplishing things together, especially when, you know, sometimes there's a lack of structure. Sometimes communication isn't great. Sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, things are unclear and nebulous and confusing. When people can kind of build each other up and we've got a whole team of like-minded people who actually own what they're doing, mm. that is the difference between good and great, in mm. my opinion.
And that's something akin to what you told me years ago when I disrupted your time working on the game to kind of ask you some advice about my life. And it really came down to having a sense of ownership for what you're doing. And it's amazing to hear that echoed through each of your team members as well.
On that note, I had to train myself to follow through mm-hmm. and finish, because what I've noticed a lot of creatives do is they are really good at starting something mm-hmm. and they will get in a pattern of starting something and then be like, oh, this isn't kind of where I want to go. I can do a better version, mm-hmm. right? And then they'll jump onto something new and then they won't finish that. And they get really good at starting things and they become terrible at finishing things. And that shows up in, you know, their reviews and, mm-hmm. you know, their work kind of becomes a story of beginnings and there's never any endings. And without follow through, you don't actually accomplish. You don't have a, you know, a board game that actually goes into the world. Mm-hmm. You have files on your computer and pieces of paper with, you know, pencil sketches on them. I will tell you, there's some parts of that development cycle that just suck. They're terrible.
Yes.
And you just, you're not motivated. You hit the wall. It's the last thing in the world you want to do. It becomes a chore. Mm-hmm. And if you can just have the discipline to push through that, the reward is always on the other side of that.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
That's been a very hard fought battle for me to build that discipline, especially off hours when I feel like I should be relaxing or I had an opportunity to, you know, hit Netflix or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really do much of that anymore because I'm busy making things.
There's definitely a difference between creative ambition and imagination and the part of your brain that you're just born with where you're excited about concepts and things that you would like to pursue, mm-hmm. and work ethic, which is something you have to learn in life. And that's the discipline that Mark is talking about, that you have to force yourself through or you will never learn to do it. And sometimes you have to finish a bunch of bad things to learn the work ethic. So when the good idea is going to go all the way home, you're ready to close it out because you've learned to work.
Yeah, if it's your passion, it shouldn't be the thing where you feel like, oh, it's 5 o'clock, time for me to go, like, turn off that part of my brain and go relax. You know, that mentality doesn't necessarily put you in the group that separates itself, if that makes sense. I'm trying to go lightly here.
No, don't go lightly. Just pound it home.
I believe very strongly in work-life balance. You need to take care of your body. You need to get rest. You need to turn
spend
off
time
the
with
brain.
Your family.
Spend time with your family. However, between 9 and 5, Monday through Friday, that's probably not, like, if you just punch in those times, that's probably not enough for you to do something amazing and really have you reach your potential. There's got to be some stuff that you're actually pursuing every spare moment because it's in you and you need to express it. You need to get that out. And if you don't feel that fire and passion, I suggest that you should probably be looking somewhere else until you find that and then go do that thing.
So what was it about tabletop games that really clicked in your mind as you were searching for something new?
You know, I think for me, it wasn't even so much just tabletop games. It's actually much more difficult to design a game than most people think. And I might not even have done it had I not known how hard it was going to be or had I known how hard it was going to be. It's something I've always played tabletop games with friends of mine my whole life. So I'm kind of familiar with them. And it was just a big open canvas. Like, I could do anything I wanted. I could tell any story I wanted. I could create a narrative. I could make a world. Is it going to be, you know, is it going to be realistic? Is it going to be a sci-fi world? Is it going to be a fantasy world? What's it going to be? I could do anything. And that freedom and latitude was really appealing to me because there wasn't a client or anybody else on the other side saying, here are all your parameters, right? Like, I was so burnt out on that.
Yeah.
And I always kind of had this desire to just, like, if I was going to do anything, like, what would I do? And it took years and years because what you end up trying to do is everything. You'd be like, well, this is going to be everything that I love and nothing that I hate. And what you find is, like, that's not how life works. You know, you have to make compromises. But at the same time, I was my own client. And it grew beyond that at some point and had to have playtesters come in and tell me how it was broken. And, you know, there were some shaming moments in there where I had to be really embarrassed and it just wasn't quite there. And again, that also requires a thick skin to go in with something that you've made that doesn't, it's not quite perfect and it's got some major flaws to help get those worked out. If you don't persist and you're not willing to be a little embarrassed for the thing that you're going to make, then you're not going to get to the point where you're not.
Yeah.
Well, and I don't think the fire inside here for any of us is for tabletop games. You know, I've played games most of my life, but I haven't spent my whole life thinking, gosh, I can't wait for my dream to come true of making a game. You know, sometimes the dream has been to write a book or to direct a movie or to make a comic or a video series on YouTube. It's just the act of bringing part of your heart into the world and putting it out there to influence other people's heart and help them bring their heart into the world, and the act of creation and inspiring yourself and people around you through whatever, a board game was where Mark was at in life and what came out. But I guarantee you that's not the only thing that Mark's going to make through Orange Nebula. That's not the point.
Yeah, and there is a perception out there that we're a board game company, and that's really not true. We're a creative agency, and we made a board game, and we're going to make a couple more, mm-hmm. Or many more. But we're also going to be doing books and toys and whatever else we decide to do. We also have a service side still. Mm-hmm. We're still a creative agency that does service work for clients, mm-hmm. and we're kind of limiting that a little bit. We're kind of being more selective and taking the right opportunities on that side. And so, yeah, we have a kind of a bigger vision for Orange Nebula beyond just one.
Can I add one thing about board games though?
Yeah.
One thing that I love about board games and the creation of board games and distribution of board games is mm-hmm. that it offers an opportunity to teach a concept without doing it too heavy-handedly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you look at Vindication, the main underlying concept of the game is an exploration of heroism. Mm. What personal attributes do you have to develop and combine? How much effort does it take to develop these attributes in order to become heroic, to redeem yourself, to vindicate yourself from any actions that you've taken in life, which, you know, may have put a dark shadow over you, you know? And the ability to take a fun game and mm-hmm. teach a concept without making it a lecture, teach it through experience, that's the kind of thing that takes a concept and actually makes it become part of someone else. And I think that that's what's cool about making board games specifically.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. That's amazing. And it also connects to not only a big idea, but a bigger community. So when you're talking about a team, you're, with games and with the creative industry, community is even larger than just a team. And games in general has a giant community. So how have you entered into the community and been embraced by the community?
Super solid transition there, man.
Yeah, really. That's what I was thinking the whole time, too.
Done.
I really was.
Gosh.
You're skilled.
Oh, golly.
Gee.
No, community is the whole thing for us. That's why we're making things. And what we have found is if you really put your heart out there in a sincere way and you're not hawking your wares, but you're out there hawking an idea and you're hawking a way of thinking and a way of feeling about the world, people gravitate toward that and they're excited about that and they're ready to connect with each other about that. And what the product is that that's all centered around is very much secondary.
Yeah.
So in a way, yes, we're making products, but more importantly, what we're making is a community. Mm. And I say we're making, you know, the community is making itself. We're giving it a platform, but they are getting on it and building it. And it has been remarkable and inspiring to see it happen. And there have been many times where we have been extremely tired and probably would have, not throw in the towel, but discouraging moments where the community pulls us up just through their enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
Enthusiasm is something different.
Enthusiasm is, we don't need to talk about that. That's...
So when you have a community, what is your community? If it's not the game, is it the community of heroes? What is that big idea that you're building up?
It's people who desire to think bigger and live a more creative life.
Mm. Yeah, it's a broad audience. We're going to draw people into, you know, our services and products. And I think people can get excited about, you know, this board game or this book or this toy. And there'll be segments of that. Mm-hmm. At a very high level, you know, we want to communicate however we can through whatever we make to people those things, right?
Right.
Be more, unlock your creativity. A lot of people talk a lot about how they're not creative. Oh, I'm not a creative person.
Right.
Well, I don't believe that. I mean, I just don't.
Even when you're color coding your spreadsheet, you're creative, okay?
Yeah.
You speak from experience, it sounds like.
There's a little anger behind that, okay? Freaking spreadsheets.
Yeah. So... Yeah, and everybody's different and everybody's drawn to different things. And that's what makes it special. You know, the community it's organic and it's ever changing and it's filled with all kinds of different viewpoints and ideas. And I think there's some wonder in that. Mm-hmm. Even designing a game, you know, part of the challenge is to design it for people who play differently than you do. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it, you know, extra hard. And that's why you have to have other people involved to help guide that, you know, the work of many hands, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, community, like Tom said, it is everything. All of business is trust. all of business is you know, there's no such thing as marketing without, you know, an element of word of mouth and, mm-hmm. and reputation and all those things. That's what brand differentiation is about.
Well, and what's interesting is, speaking of trust, your latest crowdfunding campaign for the Vindication Expansion Pack had 10,852 supporters and $910,955 pledged, which is mind-blowing. That's a lot of trust.
Yeah, it is. I mean, seriously.
That is trust right there.
We just showed them pictures of what the product would look like.
Yeah.
That's Kickstarter for you.
But I mean, the question that comes to mind, though, as I think about that, like, to me, $910,000 is a lot. But in the context of what you're doing, what type of money is that?
I love this question.
Yeah, there's a couple ways to answer that. In the industry, that's pretty solid. Mm-hmm. That's probably in the top 20%.
Wow.
In real life, you know, our net is probably nothing near what people think it is. Mm-hmm. This is not...
Nobody's bought a new car. Nobody's bought a new house. Nobody's bought... We decided Mark's biggest investment since this was a Vitamix.
Yeah, I got a Vitamix out of the deal.
You got to get a new Zoom, too. You got a dead port on one of them.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, there's a learning curve for all of this. And quite honestly, we're doing all of our own managing of companies who do logistics and mm-hmm. manufacturing overseas. And I mean, there's a tremendous amount of work and spreadsheets that goes with this. And there's a lot of cost. As we get better and better at that, as we become more efficient, we are hoping to be a successful, profitable business that mm-hmm. takes care of its people and is able to empower, you know, we're able to empower ourselves to do even more.
Insightful question, though, because you're right. No one's getting rich off of board games. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness that's not the point.
Yeah. The only other thought I have from it is, you know, we were able to bring on a few more people, right? So Teresa and Viola are new to our team, and we're able to have, you know, one person actually dedicated to customer support on all the different channels and shipping and whatnot that is, you know, stuff that if Mark and Tom were having to focus on, then they wouldn't be able to be working on the next game.
Right.
So we have been able to, you know, increase our team a bit to be able to divvy out responsibilities to hopefully make room for more creativity.
How has that helped you to think bigger, though? Because on one hand, when you don't have that trust and validation of a community, you can have the greatest idea, but stumble under the weight of that big idea. But then when you start seeing the impact, you almost gain that confidence. So how has it and bolstered your confidence?
The confidence is definitely something that you pick up when you have a success like this. In fact, for a while there, I was like, I feel just unstoppable. I feel like,
awesome.
Well, and it wasn't so much like from a business or a public perception. It's like, I feel like I believe in myself more.
Yes.
Like something unlocked in me and I actually have something that, you know, is significant and meaningful. Mm-hmm. That confidence is huge.
You know, 10,000 validations.
Yeah.
It's basically what that adds up to.
Don't you think that those validations also put like a heavy amount of responsibility on us too? Like if we're going to work on putting something else new out, yes, we have the confidence that we have an audience and a platform who cares about our brand, but we like want to do right by them so bad that it really pushes us.
Yeah, another way to say that is we're terrified because we put so much pressure on ourselves. Like this game got a lot of critical acclaim and and so everybody kind of was like, oh, I can't wait for the next awesome, amazing, award-winning thing. And we're like, gosh, I hope we could do that.
Yeah, where we're landing is perceiving those votes of validation as being support for higher levels of thinking. Mm-hmm. And instead of thinking of it as we're going to make another critically acclaimed, amazing game, instead the way we're thinking about it is we're just going to swing for the fence with really ambitious, fun ideas. Mm-hmm. And some of them are going to be home runs and some of them may not. But the thing that people are connecting with is the willingness to do that.
Yeah, I agree.
So to use your metaphor of swinging for the fences, what happens when you ground out to second and you have to get up to bat again?
That's when dedication comes into play.
That's the entire life story right there. That is a skill too, and it's a mindset skill where, you know, you keep your eyes on the prize and you just have to get up again. It sounds so cliche, and it is cliche because it's true. Most cliches are true. So, you know, at the risk of sounding cliche, you have to just get up, brush yourself off, and keep going. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have, like, if you don't develop that skill, then it's going to be very difficult, I think, for you to reach your potential, in my opinion.
Well, and with something like this, you can tweak your perception of success, too. Mm-hmm. Because just because something isn't hugely acclaimed and it's not universally loved, if a small handful of people out there are touched by it, that's still a win. You still brought something into the world that brought joy and light into people's lives. Well done. Go again.
Yeah, and I would argue that the definition of success is just honoring the creation of something that is inside you. You know what I mean? So even if nobody else likes it, like, okay, well, you made a commitment to yourself that you were going to explore this concept and put something together. And if you do right by yourself and honor yourself, do your best, then it really doesn't matter.
That's what vindication was to begin with. I was just doing it for me. And I thought at a certain point, I was like, well, maybe people would actually want to do this, want to play this game.
What was that point?
Oh, man. I don't know. I tell you what, it's just every single one of them was a step, right? So the process of designing, and then at a certain point, you realize, well, I'm kind of done. Like, I feel like it's at that point, like the playtesters love it. Like, it's got everything that it needs. You know, should I consider, you know, putting it out there? And once you make that decision, then you have to go through the entire learning curve of doing that, right? Like, how do you run a successful crowdfunding campaign? And that was 2 years of research and, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Whatever. You were like, I'm going to spend 2 years rolling this into a Vitamix.
Yeah,
is what
exactly.
You were thinking. You're like, I'm going to go to the bank now.
But 3.5 years of 2,000 hours of work so that I could get a Vitamix. Yeah.
Forget 10,000 hours. Just put Vitamix is mastery.
There we go.
Exactly.
Today's episode of Getting Work to Work brought to you by Vitamix.
Right. Exactly.
It's worth the money.
Yeah.
Vitamix.
Oh my gosh. This is so much fun.
That smoothie life.
That smoothie life.
This is so much fun. You did 2 successful Kickstarter campaigns, correct?
Yeah.
But you're leaving out 1 unsuccessful.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's okay. So yeah, here's actually how that went down. Mm-hmm. So there is a tremendous amount of nuance to being successful in A, the board game industry, and B, through crowdfunding. There's just a massive amount that you have to learn. Mm-hmm. And there's a barrier to entry for any new, like, everybody thinks that they can just make something and put it out there and be successful on Kickstarter. At least it seems that that's the perception for a lot of people, is that it's easier than it is. Mm-hmm. And I researched it really hard and put it up at the wrong time with a lot of things that weren't optimized the way they should have been, and funded or was
no,
on
it wasn't
would
quite.
Have funded
was almost funded. Mm-hmm. Relax, everyone. I know.
Get the facts right.
Yeah, it wasn't funded, but it was going to fund. But it was going to fund. It was going to do essentially not great. Like, I was probably still going to lose money. Because,
yeah, I think our goal was about 30 on that campaign.
Yeah, and the cost was probably going to be about 35 or 40 to make the game.
And we only, I think, we're at about 20.
Yeah,
and this is 1,000, like, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So we didn't fund. We canceled.
Can you tell we've blocked out the details?
We canceled that crowdfunding campaign on the advice of some people in the industry and decided that we were just going to revamp. So we did a sprint, a 2-week sprint, and we learned from the industry what we were going to be doing and basically relaunched. And fortunately, a couple big competing games had already funded and were kind of out of the picture at that point, which were kind of stealing
the
a lot
lane
of
the, opened up a little bit.
The
so
lane
to speak.
Opened up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we had some opportunity that it turned out really well. We funded for like $212,000 or something like that.
When you got me out of that first one, out of the canceled one. So that worked out.
That was the real Tom win, out of the crowd. Actually, I don't even care about the money. I just wanted Tom. And so
it worked. You hooked me.
It absolutely worked. So
that was an elaborate plan.
But I just wanted to make sure we include that, because that is a big part of the whole success of this, mm-hmm. was that it really did start with a huge humbling experience with choosing to cancel that first campaign. So it's important that that's part of the story.
Please hear how humble we are.
I'll just finish the story. So after that, we were intending to sell out. It actually went pretty quickly, but we had sent some gratitude copies to some of the big reviewers in the industry, mm-hmm. and they got their hands on it. There was no obligation. They did their own reviews of their own accord and gave us amazing reviews, way better than we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. And so then the game went crazy and we sold out and we were able to do a second Kickstarter, and that's the one that you referenced earlier.
Timing-wise was so helpful too, because those games got to them right around the end of the year when people were getting started to do their end of year top lists.
Oh, cool.
And so, you know, because it was so fresh and new, it you know, ended up on a lot of those lists.
Yeah.
And we launched the, you know, Kickstarter a month or so after that. So it was really, really good timing.
Which we totally strategized. This isn't just things breaking our way. This is all carefully coordinated and spreadsheeted.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
Yeah, I can't either.
Good. Let's leave it at that.
Well, and I think there probably is a healthy mix of strategy with luck and being prepared for luck.
Yeah, being prepared for luck is an interesting thing. There's a quote I can't recall right now that I was going to try to pull out, but...
Just make your own.
luck has to... Well, yeah, I do kind of believe that you make your own luck.
It's like preparation plus opportunity.
That's the one. Thank you. Being prepared for the right time before it gets there is kind of how you tilt the scales. The mm-hmm. book by Malcolm Gladwell, Outliers, kind mm-hmm. of details that. A lot of people think that, you know, oh, this happened to me, and so I never had the opportunity for this to happen, or this wonderful thing happened to me, and I just lucked out. Mm-hmm. I don't really subscribe to those extreme views. I think most great things in life happen because you're intentional about it.
Yeah. Getting up at 5 a.m. and work until 8 in a coffee shop.
Like yeah. every barista in all of Vancouver, Washington knows Mark,
they
knows
do.
His order, and knows that if he walks in the door, he will point at them and tell them they're awesome. I'm not joking.
They are awesome.
So what does the future look like for Orange Nebula?
It's
silence.
Wide open. I will tell you, you know, part of the discussions we have here are, A, we can do anything. Mm-hmm. B, we need to eat. So like, let's get busy doing something. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a number of projects in the queue. Some of them are for the board game industry. Some of them are for the creative community. Mm-hmm. And a few of them are client projects. And so, yeah, we have not decided that we're just going to start, you know, banging out board games. That's mm-hmm. we are working on some board games, mm-hmm. but what's much more intriguing to us is what we are capable of. And generally speaking, that means doing something beyond whatever we've done before. So yeah. we're not going to like stick to a model and start systematizing. What we're going to do is keep swinging.
Yeah. I think Love in it. The immediate future, the goal is for, I think right now only half of our audience knows we exist. Hmm. We've built a board game community and that community is strong and it's really tightly knit, but there's a whole other side of what we want to do that we haven't done yet, and so no one knows. You know, when you go to our website a year from now, mm-hmm. we want board games to be one of, you know, four different portals you can go down.
Ooh.
And we haven't shown that side of us yet, and that's the immediate goal, is to let the rest of the world know who we are, what we're doing, why it should matter to them, how it can be something they're doing.
And is that related to the creative community?
I think there's something to take away for everyone, but we've got a kind of little Venn diagram that is two circles mm-hmm. with a little bit of overlap, right? On the left circle, it is the creative community, and on the right circle, it is pop culture fans, mm-hmm. people who like games and movies and books and stories and those types of things. Where those overlap is kind of our sweet spot.
Nice.
But we do kind of service the creative side, you mm-hmm. know, designers and authors and those types of folks, anybody who fancies themselves a creative professional. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, it's people who like to get, you know, have immersive experiences with stories. And usually there's kind of a pop culture thing.
Well, and anyone that enjoys pop culture hobby type things, whether that's games or comics or toys or, you know, shirts with rocket ships on them or whatever, but that, you know, that thinks little purple monsters are fun, but that in the back of their mind feel like all the products that they're engaging with are kind of cheap and kind of poorly thought out. And yeah, I'm engaging with this thing because it has this aesthetic that kind of appeals to me, but I know it's not a full representation of who I am and my values of depth and of quality. And we feel like there's a real hunger for goofy, colorful, pop culture-y things that actually have value and substance other than just being fun. Why can't they be meaningful? Why can't they be well designed? Why can't, you know, purple tentacles have greater artistic meaning in the world?
Right.
Yeah. And that's what we're doing. That's actually really good.
One thing that I want to mention specifically is you'll see coming out of Orange Nebula, we're starting to talk about something called the Department of Creative Exploration. We also call it DOSE. So some of the merch that's coming out from us right now, in the footer of our website, there's little hints to this kind of, I don't know, sub-brand that we're working on called Department of Creative Exploration. And so that is something to keep an eye on if you're interested on how we're going to be diversifying in the near future.
Nice. Any chance, off record, I could get a glimpse behind the scenes when we're not recording?
Oh, sure.
Yes, of course.
Cool. Yeah.
There's a chance.
We will make you roll a die, and if you get...
It's a 12-sided...
Snake eyes. Cracks. Yeah.
Fail.
Well, Tom, Lacey, Mark, this has been so much fun. The last question that I have for you all is, what was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
I'm super interested in all sorts of different ideologies, theologies. I would love to just research and understand all of them. Okay. I read a book recently called Circe. It's a fictional book about ancient Greek Roman mythology and, you know, goes through the life of one of the goddesses who turns into a witch. And maybe I've been seeing if I can, you know, manifest stuff with magic in my life. Okay.
Fascinating.
So maybe I'm studying to see what I need to do to get enough power and intent in my own life to do the things that I want to do. And I'm finding pieces of that in books like that Circe that I recently listened to.
I feel
to.
Like I'm obligated to put in a second plug for Circe because that's my wife.
Oh, yeah. She's the one who recommended it to
okay,
me.
Okay, well, that makes sense. About that. So my wife only reads like classic, well-regarded literature. She does not read modern stuff. She just doesn't have an interest in it. And she will not stop talking about how great that book is.
Yeah, it's so funny. I totally forgot she is the one that recommended it to me.
That's awesome.
I get little tidbits all the time. So if it's a TED Talk or if it's a master class or if it's two chapters of whatever 17 books I have on my shelf that I don't complete regularly, I started to move away from straight fiction into much more kind of personal development, business development types of books, those types of things. So the book about Pixar, I can't recall the title.
Creativity Inc.
Yeah. Creativity Inc. Yeah, that was
fantastic book.
Incredible book. I watched master classes. I remember again Malcolm Gladwell master class and those types of things and TED Talks and just getting short bits that I can kind of fit into the spaces in my life are where I gain a lot of that inspiration. I watch a lot of movies. I say a lot. I don't mean a lot. I mean probably a couple a month. And I'm very intentional about what they are and those types of things inspire world building in me because I never want to build what I see. I always want to build something different
or
something beyond that's in my mind. So that's, I don't know how to describe my crazy brain.
So what was the last movie that you watched for world building purposes?
Oh man, they're all for world building purposes. Even if it's, even if it's boring.
Well, we saw Joker recently.
Okay.
Yeah. Oof. I don't want to build that world.
Well, that's a deep dive into empathy, into understanding pain and sorrow and what's caused by that.
Yeah. There's a human element that needs to be the central kind of spine in every story. And I think every story that we experience and read or watch kind of adds layers to our overall perspective and worldview. And so in that sense, I think everything that we consume kind of impacts, you know, what we're able to make or echo back. There haven't been any movies lately that have really triggered me like that. I'm going to go watch that again. Or I'm just like, I'm really caught. I will have that with a commercial though. Like sometimes a commercial will come on TV and I don't watch TV.
Oh yeah. That one.
Much.
And it's a hotel commercial about what if humankind could be more human? You know, what
yeah.
if you know, what if being something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's a Marriott or a Choice Ooh. Hotels or something
that was
like
a,
that.
That was a good one.
Yeah, there's anything that kind of has a heartbeat that goes beyond business
yeah.
or cliche story. There's just so much stuff out in the world
that's give Tom a turn now.
Pumped out. I just want to finish my thought and you keep interrupting me. Dear God, I'm done. Go.
Mic drop.
Well, I'm sitting over here stressing out because I know that there are some obscure things that I would love to plug that I'm not thinking of right now mm-hmm. that I'm going to regret not mentioning later.
You can email me and I'll put them in the show notes.
There you go. And then Tom said, yeah, check the show notes. I'm sure they're great. The last two things that I can think of that blew my mind and left a real imprint on me are both fairly mainstream, but if you haven't engaged with them, they can be life-changing. One of them is Hamilton. Mm-hmm. If you've just heard about Hamilton, but you've not actually listened to the Broadway recording of Hamilton, it will absolutely change you. Mm-hmm. It is incredible. And then the other thing is a fantasy book series by a very popular author named Brandon Sanderson called The Stormlight Archive. Mm. And both of these things take a really empathetic look at broken people mm-hmm. and their journey toward becoming unbroken and becoming whole again and realizing that they are not, you're not defined by the worst thing that you've ever done and that you are so much more than your mistakes. And in a lot of ways, your mistakes help define the best parts of you. And I think a lot, if not all of us, can identify with that message, at least to some extent. And both of those things give a really strong voice to that.
That's awesome.
I'm sorry for cutting you off, Mark.
I will forgive you in 12 minutes.
Okay. I can wait that long.
Is that when we go to lunch? All is forgiven. Lunch is the
That's right.
What is ground. For lunch?
It's food.
I don't know. Yeah, freshly just got delivered.
We have no idea.
Well, Mark, Tom, Lacey, this has been so much fun. Thank you for just sharing about Orange Nebula and the Department of Creative Exploration.
You got it.
I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what you do next. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks for putting up with us.
It is always fun to come across kindred spirits during these interviews. For the last year, I've been inspired to chase after big ideas. So to have a company like Orange Nebula on the show, whose sole philosophy is to get people to think bigger, is pretty awesome, and it motivates me to keep going. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.